In partnership with the Treasure Site, Areas Grey, welcome to everyone to the new season of Live from the Code Bar, recorded from the Code Theme Bar of Fenwood Manor. I am your guide on this adventure, Rob. On this show, I want to talk to you about a found hoard, the Servro treasure. This hoard of Roman silver vessels is of unknown origin, and because of this, multiple countries have fought over its ownership. Even as I record this podcast right now, the treasure sits in a bank vault, not in a museum for people to enjoy. Is it cursed, or is it being hidden away because of greed? But first of all, I want to start off with the usual housekeeping. I want to give a big shout out and thank you to Nick Spira, who created the show's music, Robert Brewer, who did all of the amazing artwork, Stephen Jenner, my brilliant editor, Dustin and Deidre White, who have helped me promote the show and helped me look for treasure when I cannot go myself, and my treasure hunting team, Team Fortune, who's now became Team Pentagon, which is Nick, Lisa, Adam, and Ashley, who are the best treasure team ever. There are so many other more people that I could mention, but that could be a podcast all its own. So for now, check out our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages for more shoutouts. Now on to the story. The Servro, and this is pronounced in lots of different ways. I've heard it as Servro, I've heard it as Servro. I'm going with the Servro pronunciation. The Servro treasure is a hoard of 14 late Roman silver objects of exceptional quality, reported to be worth more than over $200 million on today's market. This astonishing story of cursed treasure has lots of plots and counterplots, suspicious deaths, and black market double dealing. The treasure was first looted from an unknown Roman palace or villa sometime in the 1970s and appeared in London in the early 1980s with an export license from Lebanon. This export license was later shown to have been forged. The silver was later purchased by the Marquis of Northampton and in 1990 was on display in New York, ready for another auction later that same year. But before this auction could happen, the governments of both Lebanon, Hungary, and Yugoslavia lodged legal claims to it. In 1993, an American court rejected these claims and finally ruled that the Marquis was the legal owner of the controversial silver. The US court's decision caused an uproar in Hungary. They claimed, and this claim was backed by a number of experts, was that the hoard had been discovered in their country in 1978 by a quarry worker and illegally exported. As of today, the Servro treasure has been left without any secure provenance and is tainted by its dark history, and is now regarded as unsaleable. So let's unpack this tale. The name Servro treasure derives from the Latin inscription on one of the silver plates of the treasure, which reads, Hec Servro tibi durant per secula multa posteris ut prostitit vascula digna tuis. So that's quite a mouthful, but in English that translates to, let these, O Servro, yours for many ages be, small vessels fit to serve your offspring worthy. The inscribed silver Servro plate is about 27 inches in diameter and weighs almost 20 pounds by itself. The combined weight of all 14 pieces of the collection is over 154 pounds. The lavishly decorated silver tableware that makes up the Servro treasure, and it includes things like a large copper cauldron within which it was discovered. As luck would have it, this huge cauldron had preserved its contents from oxidization, so the silver was in excellent condition, although much of it did show signs of use. According to Dr. Marlia Mango of the University of Oxford, the treasure dates from between AD 350 and AD 450, though some Hungarian scholars, among them a Dr. Zoltz Vizay of the University of Pécs, maintain that the objects were all manufactured within the 4th century AD. Interestingly, radiocarbon dating of the soot on the copper cauldron actually dated to sometime between AD 140 and AD 410, but with an error margin that could extend as late as AD 610. This later date is when Dr. Mango believes that the treasure was buried. So the treasure consists of a collection of four large plates, five ewers, which are a type of pitcher, two buckets, a cosmetic casket, an amphora, and a basin, all elaborately decorated with hunting, feasting, and mythological scenes, images of everyday life, and intricate geometric forms. Unusually for a hoard, there are no spoons or coins, items that are often found together with sets of Roman tableware. The Servro plate itself, also known as the Great Hunting Dish, is one of the earliest pieces in the collection, probably dating from around the mid to late 4th century AD. The hoard consists of the hunting dish, has at its center a medallion decorated with scenes of hunting and an outdoor banquet, and the Achilles plate, at over 28 inches in diameter, is the largest object in the Servzo hoard, and depicts the legend of Achilles. The Meleager plate is decorated with a central medallion showing the Greek hero Meleager after killing the Caledonian boar, flanked by the huntress Atalantia and four other Caledonian hunters. The rim of this huge vessel is decorated with a frieze showing a range of mythological scenes, including the judgment of Paris and the story of Perseus and Andromeda. Other pieces from the Servzo treasure include a large drinking vessel known as the Hippolytus jug, which has two beautifully crafted handles in the shape of leopards, and an ua, again a pitcher, which is 1.5 feet tall and embossed with a dynastic procession. This vessel was probably used for serving wine, while other vessels in the assemblage were used for eating, drinking, and for washing hands. Most archaeologists agree that these 14 objects were only part of what once had been a much bigger hoard. Dr. Vizet, again, divides the 14 objects in the Servzo hoard into two groups. These with repus decoration, which actually is a type of embossing or pressing shapes into metal, such as that of the Achilles plate, the Meleager plate, and the amphora. The dynastic ewer, the Hippolytus ewer, and two Hippolytus buckets, and the casket. And those decorated with using a black inlay called Nilo. These being the geometrically decorated plate, the hunting plate, two geometrically decorated ewers, and an ewer decorated with animals and the basin. She also believes that within these two main groups, only a few can be assigned to the same workshop or craftsman. Dr. Mango, who I mentioned before, also considers that the objects to be the work of a number of different craftsmen, and thinks that they were all manufactured in different and various parts of the Roman Empire and collected throughout a long period. A number of the objects, including the amphora, may have been made in the eastern Mediterranean region, perhaps as far as Constantinople, whereas others may have come from a workshop in Thessaloniki in northern Greece. So who or what was Servzo? Most scholars are of the opinion that Servzo was either a Roman general or an extremely wealthy Roman client, probably of non-Roman background. Judging by the origin of his name and the silver, it was probably a lavish wedding gift. Interestingly, the Cho Rho sign, which is an early Christian monogram formed by imposing the first two letters of the word Christ in Greek, which is Chi and Rho, used to signify the beginning and the end of the inscription on the hunting plate, shows that Servzo and his family may well have been some early Christians. But what of the extraordinary journey of the treasure itself? The truth is that no one really knows for sure where the treasure was before the end of 1980. Let's start with the Hungarian version of events. Their story begins in the town of Polgáty, which is in central western Hungary. Sometime in 1978, a 22-year-old named Joseph Szmer was working at a stone quarry near the village of, and I don't have a great pronunciation for this, but Kozayahi, northeast of Lake Balaton. While working his shovel, he hit something metallic. He investigated further and found a very large, grime-encrusted copper vessel containing the hoard of silver objects. But due to the filth covering the artifacts, he didn't realize the extraordinary nature of what he had found. What Szmer did next with the treasure, is a mystery. Though he is said to have hidden it in his family home in Polgáty, later Szmer apparently took as many as 6 of the objects to sell at an area market near the Budapest airport. Someone at the market seemed to have realized the value of the objects, as the objects later also then turned up in Vienna at a center for the antiquities trade, and were now in the position of Halim Korban, a Lebanese antiquities dealer, and his partner Anton Thalek, a Yugoslav Serb koi dealer. A few months later, Szmer apparently left his job at the quarry and moved to Budapest himself. He later returned home some weekends, but told his family little about his new life, though it was obvious from his expensive clothes that he had somehow come into money. At the beginning of 1979, Szmer went to fulfill his national service duty at the army barracks in Papa, in the northwest of Polgáty. Around this time, He is believed to have hidden the treasure in a hole in the floor of an old wine cellar close to Polgardi. Years later, stories were to surface that Samer had shown the treasure to a few of his friends, some of whom had held and examined it. One, an Istvan Astraza, described a heavy box decorated with birds on its top. Others stated that Samer had told them of finding a buried silver treasure that comprised of about 200 pieces, and that he had sold some of the pieces of the collection to the Lebanese dealer Halim Corbin, and this was later sold into a consortium that was called the Art Consultancy. And this was actually a consultancy that was run by the art and antiques dealer Peter Wilson. So this is where it starts to get a little bit even more stranger. Wilson was a colossal figure on the London art market and the centre of a network of antiquities dealers. He was also, to say the least, an interesting character. Credited by many as the one person responsible for creating the modern Sotheby's, during World War II, Wilson was employed by MI6 with the code number 007. Yep, I did say it. Where he became friendly with one Ian Fleming, the Navy's intelligence liaison officer with MI6. According to Wilson's own story, he was part of the inspiration for Fleming's James Bond character. In his 1997 book, Sotheby's, The Inside Story, author Peter Watson mentions that Wilson was also suspected of being a Soviet spy and that he retired as chairman of Sotheby's soon after Sir Anthony Blunt, an art historian and former MI5 officer, was exposed as a member of the Cambridge Five, a group of Soviet spies working for the Soviet Union from 1934 to at least the early 1950s. Wilson did have connections with various members of the Cambridge Five. However, there is no direct evidence that he was ever a Soviet spy. Be that as it may, Peter Wilson subsequently arranged to have the ewer from the treasure examined by the British Museum, where it was cleaned and revealed to be a very rare and valuable piece of 4th or 5th century Roman silver. So as not to arouse suspicion, Corbin, which was a Lebanese dealer, brought further objects from the treasure to London, one or two at a time, and it seems these were bought by Peter Wilson and the Art Consultancy. At around about the same time in Hungary, the body of Joseph Zemir, the quarry worker we mentioned before, was found hanging from the very rafters of that disused wine cellar we talked about before. The police determined that it was suicide. The treasure, which had apparently been buried close by, was long gone, leaving only a hole in the ground. Throughout the next couple of months, two or more of Zemir's friends were also found dead in the area. According to Peter Landsman, in his 2001 Atlantic Monthly article on the Servzo case, one of Samir's co-workers at the quarry had died after eating poison cheese, and another was found hanging by his neck in a forest. Were these deaths merely a coincidence? The Hungarian police seemed to think so, as their investigation could not officially link the three deaths. So in 1993, a prisoner named Joseph Lelcakes told a tabloid newspaper that Joseph Samir had indeed discovered the Servzo treasure and that three other people who knew of his discovery had died in mysterious circumstances. In 1990, a decade after the events, Bela Volkan, the police officer in charge of the Hungarian investigation into the Servzo treasure, decided to follow up on the local rumours that Samir's death had not been a suicide, but murder connected to the treasure. Volkan carried out investigations into the supposed suicide and came to the conclusion that Samir could not have hanged himself with his military belt, as the official investigations had stated. Volkan believes that Samir was murdered and his body placed in the wine cellar to obscure the origins of the treasure. Going back to Peter Landsman's Atlantic Monthly article, it also contained further sensational information about Samir's connection with the treasure. Landsman described meeting Zoltan Fodomisi, the principal of the local school, and a keen coin collector who often traded with Joseph Samir. Fodomisi told Landsman that Samir had shown him the treasure and that he, Fodomisi, had advised that the young man to take it to the National Museum in Budapest. Fodomisi also confessed that even after 20 years after seeing the mysterious Roman silver, he was still afraid for his life. Knowledge of the treasure was a dangerous thing, he said. Landsman also mentions meeting Joseph Samir's youngest stepbrother, Istvan, who informed him that together with Joseph's other stepbrother, Attila, They had helped clean one of the pieces of the treasure with sandpaper. Estevan also claimed that after Joseph found the treasure, he was visited by the Russian and Hungarian officers, and that he believed that the military was connected with his half-brother's death. The Servso treasure was meanwhile appearing in London piece by piece via that Halim Corbin and Anton Talek. And in 1981, lawyer Peter Mempris of the firm Allen and Overy persuaded Spencer Crompton, what a very proper English name by the way, the Marquis of Northampton, to invest through the Ark Consultancy. And he was told that the treasure would be far more valuable if complete. So in the early years of the 1980s, he spent almost $16 million acquiring what he thought was a full set. Northampton's plan was to resell the silver later through the agency of Peter Wilson. He told police in 1990 that he was unaware of its exact origin, but believed Corbin and Talek when they told him that it had been found in the Tyre and Sidon regions of Lebanon. By 1983, the year of Wilson's death, Northampton had obtained 10 pieces of the treasure and offered them for sale to the wealthiest museum in the world, the J. Paul Getty Museum in Los Angeles, for $10 million. However, when the Getty examined the Lebanese export certificates accompanying the silver, it found them to be fake. Seemingly unperturbed by this, Peter Mempris, by now Northampton's lawyer, arranged for the new Lebanese documents via his agent in Beirut, a man named Ramiz Rizik. But the Getty became suspicious and backed out of the deal. I want to take a break here and talk a little bit more about the new partnership between the Code Bar and the Arias Gray website. A few months ago, I reached out to Gray, the creator of the site, because his site is just an amazing thing. It's a combination travel blog for treasure hunters that shares amazing information of real-life treasures and armchair treasure hunts. It has its own forum and Discord, and now has a way to listen to the Live from the Code Bar podcast right from his site. In this year, Gray will be launching his new treasure hunt called Dead Man's Tale. I've seen little snippets of it, and you do not want to miss out on this. It's going to be amazing. And I cannot wait to have him on the podcast soon to talk about it when it's finally released. So please go to www.ariasgray.com. That's Gray with an E, not an A. And read some of the amazing stories. Of course, I am a writer on the page as well. And follow Arias Gray on Instagram at Arias Gray Treasures, Twitter at Arias Gray _. And if you're on Facebook, join the Arias Gray Treasure Hunting Community Group. As well, like I said, we are on also Discord as well. We have a group on Discord. All of which will be included in the show notes of the podcast. Now, back to the podcast itself. Throughout the next few years, Northampton acquired 4 more pieces of the treasure, and by 1990, he was the sole owner of the entire 14-piece collection. At a news conference in New York in February of the same year, Sotheby's announced that the existence of a fabulous silver treasure worth $70 million that had been found in the 1970s in what was once the province of Phoenicia in the Eastern Roman Empire, in other words, modern Lebanon. According to Sotheby's, the Lebanese embassy in Switzerland had authenticated the licenses used to export the treasure from Lebanon. On February 9, 1990, the London newspaper The Independent published a number of articles about the Sotheby's auction, which stated that although the provenance was uncertain, the Servso hoard was believed to have been found in either Lebanon or Eastern Europe. Soon after, on February 14th, the Sotheby's put the treasure on display in New York in preparation for a proposed auction later that year in Switzerland. But before the auction, Sotheby's had notified the 29 countries whose territory had once lain within the borders of the Roman Empire of the impending sale of the Servso treasure, inquiring whether the pieces were recorded as stolen property, which is needed before auctions. On February 15th, the Republic of Lebanon officially put in a demand for the return of the treasure, followed by claims by the Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, which soon became Croatia, and almost a year later, Hungary. Prolonged legal proceedings followed as each country carried out extensive investigations into the treasure and attempted to uncover evidence that the silver had been discovered in its own territory. However, before the case came to trial, Lebanon withdrew its claim, mainly because of the fake Lebanese licenses. And then finally, in 1993, the New York Court of Appeals rejected the claims of both Hungary and Croatia, finding them without merit, and ruled that the tainted silver should be returned to the Marquis of Northampton. If the Marquis was the innocent dupe in the Servso affair, as he has always claimed to be, then it is obvious that his legal advisors at the time, Alan and Overy were not looking out for his best interests. Left with a priceless yet unsaleable collection of Roman silver, in 1999 Northampton decided to sue Mr. Mempress and his London law firm, Alan and Overy, for damages in relation to the advice they gave him during the purchase of the silver, charging them with fraud and conspiracy to defraud. The case was eventually settled out of court and the Marquis received a reported $28 million in compensation. After the court case, nothing was heard of the Serso treasure until September of 2006, when Bonhams announced a private exhibition of the pieces to take place in October, on October 17th of that year. Rumours were that the Marquis was again trying to offload the silver, and indeed he was quoted by the online version of the English newspaper The Guardian on October 17, 2006, as saying he hopes the Serso treasure will be sold, and that it has cursed his family. But putting the treasure back in the public eye did not attract the buyer that Northampton hoped for, and instead it brought a renewed claim of ownership again from Hungary, in the form this time of a letter from its Ministry of Education and Culture. The letter stated that the treasure could not be sold, and it was the property of Hungarian state, and that Hungary, maintains our claim of title to it and will take all possible legal measures pursuant to this matter. The Serso treasure was even brought up in the House of Lords in answer to searching questions about the Bonhams exhibition put by Colin Renfrew, Baron Renfrew of the Camisthorn, a prominent archaeologist and senior fellow of the Macdonald Institute for Archaeological Research in Cambridge in the UK. Nevertheless, the exhibition went ahead, and although the Serso treasure was not sold, no legal claim to ownership was made by Hungary. But does Hungary, or for that matter Croatia, have a legitimate claim to the Serso treasure? Croatia's claim to the treasure is much less than what Hungary's was, and is partly based upon the information given by phone to a journalist named David Keyes, who worked for the Independent newspaper. Keyes would not reveal his source, but in March 1990, the Independent ran a story that stated that the treasure had been discovered in the 1970s by Yugoslav troops at a military installation near the town of Pula, on the southern tip of the Istrian Peninsula, in what is now Croatia. The silver had then been smuggled out of the country in a diplomatic pouch. At the New York trial, Yugoslavia produced eyewitnesses whose testimony was used to support his claim to the treasure, in the form of Anton Chekhov, a retired secret policeman from Pula. Chekhov testified that in May 1961, he had seen pieces of the Serso treasure at a military base near the village of Barbariga, around 13.5 miles northwest of Pula. He also stated that he had seen further pieces at a house in Bargariga the same day. Chekhov's testimony was supported by another retired secret policeman from Pula called Ivan Kurik, who stated that he had been with Chekhov at Barbariga and had also seen the treasure. Unfortunately for the Yugoslav-Croatian claim, it was later revealed that Kurik had changed his story a number of times. For example, when interviewed by Croatian authorities on three separate occasions between 1990 and 1992, he had repeatedly stated that he had no knowledge of any silver treasure from Barbariga. Chekhov later stated that he was not sure if the silver in Barbariga was actually the Serso treasure. But Chekhov's greatest inconsistencies was his description of the silver plates that he had seen at the size that he had seen. He stated that they were the size of dinner plates, which is obviously much smaller than the huge examples in the Serso treasure hoard like I talked about earlier. In June of 1991, a report by the Croatian Ministry of Internal Affairs admitted that after a lengthy investigation, it could find no evidence that the Serso treasure had been found in Yugoslavia or Croatian territory. Hungary does appear to have a pretty watertight claim on the Serso treasure. A retired detective sergeant named Richard Ellis, who was formerly with Scotland Yard's Art and Antiquity Squad, who carried out an extensive investigation into the provenance of the silver, believes that the Hungarians have the strongest case. Indeed, there appears to be substantial amount of hard evidence for the legitimacy of the Hungarians' claim. One piece of this evidence appears to be on the central medallion of the hunting plate from the collection, in the form of an inscription bearing the name Pelso, next to the body of water. Pelso is the Roman name for Lake Balaton, just a few miles away from where Joseph Samir supposedly discovered the treasure. Another link with the Serso treasure is an exquisitely decorated silver tripod in Hungary's National Museum in Budapest. Interpreted by Hungarian archaeologists as a folding table called a quadruped, this object was found in 1878 near Polgárdi, and Zsolt Mirav of Hungary's National Museum is convinced that there is a close connection between the quadruped and the Szövetszó treasure, due to the similarities in the decoration and the date. The object is thought, this is the quadruped, is thought to be of the date middle to second half of the 4th century AD. Scientific evidence also seems to support Hungary as the provenance of the treasure. In her article, Contributions to the Archaeology of the Szövetszó Treasure in the Antiquities Journal, Dr. Zsolt Vissé states that mineralogical analysis using electron microscopy of soil samples taken from the Melega plate match soils in the area of the village of, and this is a big one, Zsevbádeletabatyán, which is 18.6 miles from Lake Balaton. Furthermore, Dr. Vissé states that X-ray diffraction analysis of the soil incrustations on the copper cauldron that contained the treasure and the soil taken from the pit in the wine cellar showed that they had the same mineral composition. Therefore, he reasons, they can be considered as materials from the same soil environment. In the same article, Dr. Vissé refers to a definite connection between Joseph Samir's discovery of the Szövetszó treasure and his murder in the wine cellar. The majority of the evidence for the Hungarian case was presented in a Channel 4, which is a UK special edition of their popular archaeological show, Time Team. The show, entitled The Mystery of the Roman Silver, aired in December of 2008 and contained interviews with many of the major news players in the Szövetszó drama, though Lord Northampton and the show was not allowed to film the treasure itself, which was then held in a vault at Bonhams in London. If the treasure did originate in Hungary, what was its history and why was it buried? Dr. Vissé believes that in the light of the apparent reference to Lake Balaton on the hunting plate, the discovery of the Roman quadruped near Polgárdi, and the results of the soil sampling, Szövetszó must have been the wealthy owner of one of the large Roman villas located around the shores of the lake. Dr. Vissé suggests that the villa in question was near the town of Zsevbádeletabatyán, from where the soil samples were taken earlier. Excavations at a villa site in the area in the 1990s revealed traces of burning and destruction dating to around the end of the 4th century, which could be interpreted as a sign of an attack, possibly by barbarian invaders. Could the Szövetszó treasure have come from this villa and have been concealed at the time of the attack, to be unearthed 1,600 years or so later by Joseph Samir? This scenario certainly sounds plausible. However, not everybody is convinced by the evidence put forward by Hungary in support of its claim. In terms of the Pelso inscription on the central medallion of the hunting plate, Dr. Marlia Mungo notes that another neighbouring inscription, Ocientas, was probably the name of the horse illustrated next to it, the Pelso inscription. Dr. Mango believes it may also relate to the dog seated above the inscription, rather than the water illustrated, which appears to be more like a river or a stream than a lake. All of this, however, sounds much less likely than a place name. But hey, I'm not an archaeologist. There are also questions surrounding the soil sample evidence that seemingly puts the origins of the Szövetszó treasure in Hungary. At the 1993 New York trial, both Croatia and Hungary were asked to provide soil samples from various parts of their countries to establish whether the soil matched ancient incrustations found on the pieces of the treasure. Due to the fact that Croatia delayed its submissions and constantly changed the samples it wished to submit, it was forbidden by the court from using them to support its claim. The court came to the same decision about Hungary, prohibiting it from using a soil sample from the wine cellar where the treasure was allegedly kept. Why was this? Well, at the trial, a police officer named Bela Vulcan admitted that there was no witnesses who claimed to have seen the treasure in the wine cellar. Much more seriously for the Hungarian case was the fact that the former owner of the cellar told the Hungarian authorities that the indentation of the floor of the cellar was in fact where a wine vat had been placed for many years. This is interesting, as in the 2008 Time Team show about the treasure, Bela Vulcan still pointed out the indentation in the wine cellar as the place where the cauldron containing the silver had once been hidden. In fact, when Dr. Anna Bennett of the Conservation and Technical Services carried out analysis of the incrustation on the cauldron, the results showed that it had not been buried in the earth at all, but concealed in a limestone environment such as a natural cave or a chamber. The New York trial revealed a number of facts that do not reflect well on Hungary's claim to the Sövso treasure. In September 1990, Joseph Samir's father, informed the Hungarian authorities under oath that after seeing the publicity in Hungary surrounding the possibility of a great Roman treasure being found in the country, he thought there must be a connection with the death of his son, who was an enthusiastic collector of old coins and medals. Mr. Samir urged the Hungarian authorities to investigate the matter, and it was after this that the case of Joseph Samir's suicide was reopened. At the trial, there were a number of witnesses called on by Hungary's lawyers who claimed to have seen pieces of the treasure at Samir's family home in the late 1970s. One of the witnesses was Istvan Strazia. Strazia, a stonemason, testified that he had seen several pieces of the silver at Samir's home in 1978 and 1979 and identified the cosmetic casket specifically. At a previous interview with Hungarian authorities, Strazier had produced a drawing of the casket, giving it its dimensions. A model replica of the casket based on Strazier's measurements was constructed and presented at that trial. Unfortunately for the Hungarians, and it really does make you wonder why it was presented at the trial, this model was just a fraction of the size of the real Sövso casket. Another witness was from Polgárdi, who claimed to have seen the treasure, was Joseph Harmet, who testified that he had seen the copper cauldron on a shelf in Samir's home. Harmet identified the cauldron from a picture of it in a fully restored state, the result of extensive restoration work which began in 1988. However, in the late 1970s, when Harmet claimed to have seen it, the cauldron would have been in its unrestored state and would have been unrecognizable compared to what it looks like now, and Harmet would not have been able to identify it. All of this underhand dealing seems to bear out the statement that, for the record, that the 1993 trial is rife with allegations of witness interference and fears, real or not, of government retaliation. What appears to be witness manipulation on Hungary's part does not, of course, rule out Hungary as a source of the Sövso treasure, but it does cast a shadow over their claim. All the evidence points to the fact that the tragic suicide of a 24-year-old man was transformed by the Hungarian authorities into a murder connected with the Sövso treasure in an attempt to provide a backstory for its discovery in their country. Since the New York Court of Appeals rejected its claim back in 1993, Hungary has provided no new evidence nor taken any further legal action regarding the Sövso treasure. As it stands at this moment, Hungary's claim to the treasure remains plausible but unproven. So one of the main difficulties in providing a good provenance for the Sövso silver is that although there have been a number of discoveries made of late Roman high-quality silver tableware, very few pieces are of a similar size. Furthermore, those finds that are comparable have been discovered mainly in western provinces of the Roman Empire. Neither Hungary nor Croatia has any record of material similar to those found in the Sövso hoard ever being found on their soil. One similar piece to the Sövso hunting plate is the great dish from the Mildenhall late Roman treasure, a stunning hoard of highly decorated 4th century Roman silver tableware found in Mildenhall, Suffolk, in the east of England. The great dish is 23.8 inches in diameter and is elaborately decorated with the face of the sea god Oceanus at its center, surrounded by scenes detailing the worship and mythology of Bacchus. Other items in the Mildenhall treasure are also decorated with pagan mythology scenes, and some of the spoons in the collection bear the Christian Cho Ro monogram. Closest in parallel to the Sövso hunting plate is the Kaiserorgat plate, part of the Kaiserorgat treasure, a rich 4th century hoard discovered in a Roman frontier fort on the River Rhine, east of Basel in Switzerland. The plate, also known as the Achilles plate, is 23.2 inches in diameter and is beautifully decorated with a central medallion showing the scenes from the early life Achilles. The Kaiserorgat silver hoard appears to have been amassed over a period of time by a high-ranking Roman officer, as the name Marcialis appears on 13 of the items, and the items also include gifts from two Roman emperors. The treasure was probably hidden away in advance of an attack by the Alamanni, an alliance of Germanic tribes living around the Upper Rhine area. Inscriptions on a number of the items show that many of the silver pieces were made in Theliarchoniki in northern Greece, also a possible place for the manufacture of the Sövso treasure. Also important in the context of late Roman silver hoards is the Corbridge treasure, found in the River Tyne at Corbridge, once the Roman fort and town of Coria in Northumberland, northeast of England. a magnificent late 4th century silver train known as the Corbridge Lanx from this hoard depicts a shrine to Apollo, with Apollo's twin sister Artemis, Diana, and Athena, Minerva, also in attendance. The tray was probably manufactured somewhere close by. Despite these examples, however, without further evidence, it is a fruitless exercise to try and guess the provenance of the Serso treasure, which could in reality be from anywhere in the vast Roman Empire. In March of 2007, the Art newspaper claimed to have access to documents from the 1980s that revealed the existence of previously unknown silver pieces of the Serso treasure. In an article entitled "The Silver Missing from the Serso Hoard," Christina Ruiz alluded to a document from Helen Corbin addressed to Guernoitoy Limited, a division of the Royal Bank of Canada in Guernsey, in the Channel Islands. This document mentions remaining silver objects from the hoard: 187 silver gilt spoons, 37 silver gilt drinking cups, and 5 silver bowls, seemingly indicating that these objects were originally part of the Serso treasure, but had been split up from the original 14 known pieces purchased by Lord Northampton. Another document, cited by the Art newspaper, was a letter documented April 6, 1987, from another Guernsey-based concern, Ferrico Trust Limited, to Ramiz Rizik, the previously mentioned associate of Lord Northampton's lawyer, Peter Memphis. The letter sent to a P.O. box in Lebanon mentions that Rizik has agreed to obtain export licenses for the remainder of the hoard, which we understand to be various cups and spoons at a price under half the cost of the first 3 licenses. There were also rumors of the existence of 2 other silver plates, one with another engravement of the Chai Rho in the center, and the other known as the Constantine plate, which showed a portrait of Constantine the First, who was a Roman emperor from AD 306 to AD 337, in the center. That might be part of the Serso original treasure. However, despite the documents and the speculation, Northampton's new lawyer, Ludovic D. Walden, said in a statement to the Art newspaper that there was no direct evidence now or before of there being any pieces forming part of the Serso treasure beyond the 14 pieces. Despite these examples, however, further evidence of it is a fruitless exercise to guess at the provenance of the Serso treasure, which could in reality be from anywhere in the vast Roman Empire. In March 2007, the Art newspaper claimed to have had access to documents from the 1980s that revealed the existence of previously unknown pieces of the Serso treasure. In an article entitled "The Silver Missing from the Serso Hoard," Christina Ruiz alludes to a document from Halim Corbin addressed to Guernroy Limited, a division of the Royal Bank of Canada in Guernsey, in the Channel Islands. This document mentions remaining silver objects from the hoard: 187 silver gilt spoons, 37 silver gilt drinking cups, and 5 silver bowls, seemingly indicating that these objects were originally part of the Serso treasure, but had been split up from the 14 original known pieces purchased by Lord Northampton. Another document, cited again by the Art newspaper, was a letter dated April 6, 1987, from another Guernsey-based concern, Ferrico Trust Limited, to Ramiz Rizik, the previously mentioned associate of Lord Northampton's lawyer, Peter Memphis. The letter, sent to a P.O. box in Lebanon, mentions that Rizik had agreed to obtain export licenses for the remainder of the hoard, which we understand to be various cups and spoons, at a price half under the cost of the first 3 licenses. There were also rumors of the existence of 2 other silver plates, one with another engravement of the Chai Rho in the center, and another known as the Constantine plate, which showed a portrait of Constantine I, who was Roman Emperor, from AD 306 to AD 337 in the center. That might be part of the Serso treasure. However, despite the documents and the speculation, Lord Northampton's new lawyer, Ludovic D. Walden, said in a statement to the Art newspaper that there was no direct evidence now or before of there being any pieces forming part of the Serso hoard beyond the 14 pieces. In July of 2007, the Croatian weekly newspaper Globus and the Hungarian weekly Budapeshte Zeitung carried a story claiming that Hungarian-born American businessman George Soros was buying the Serso treasure from Lord Northampton and donating it to the National Museum of Budapest. However, the reports were soon denied both by representatives of Soros in New York and by Lord Northampton, who stated categorically that he was not selling the treasure to Soros. Nothing has been heard of the alleged sale since. So now we've once more come to the end of another show. For all the information that doesn't make it into the podcast, as well as links that I've mentioned in the show, please look for the show notes, and please don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or with the handle @CodeBarLive, as well as follow Areas Grey. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, and please do help the podcast grow. This is pretty important. It's been a while since I've had any new ratings and reviews, so if you get a chance and you are listening, please do rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts. So everyone, until next time, keep digging.